Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 133. I'm comedian Simon Kane, and for those of you new to the show, this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the worlds of stand-up, comedy, radio, and today, the South African comedy festival circuit. Eddie Kassar is a publicist by trade who fell into promoting a comedy festival after helping run the PR for the first ever Red Nose Day. This podcast is awesome. It goes into a lot of detail of the history of South Africa and comedy in the country, as well as the festival, and the way that the negative things that have happened in the country's past have positively shaped its present and future. I got a lot out of this. I really enjoyed hearing how adversity has created so many opportunities and created some amazing comedy. I think anyone looking into starting a festival or currently running a festival could learn loads about sponsorships and the financial backing of corporate entities, as well as how to grow an audience for performers. He gets into it in a lot more detail, and it's going to be very fascinating for you, but he just sells out every year. Like, he doesn't even have to really do much because he's got so many promotion sponsors and corporate sponsors, and is so embedded in the zeitgeist of that city that he just runs it. He just has to go around booking it, which obviously is a lot of work, but what a beautiful thing to not have to worry about. Ticket sales are the most frustrating part of shows, as far as I'm concerned, and to know you're going to sell out every year, to know that the festival could expand by a day every year and it would still go well, it's a really inspiring podcast to listen to. I'm still in quarantine, and I'm guessing you are as well too, given that the entire circuit has come to a standstill in every area of the arts. As a result, I have zero money coming in from shows, and I am still having to cancel festivals a few months ahead of time. As a result, I would love it if you had some money, if you could donate it my way. There is a coffee link, which essentially means you can give me like $3 or $4, I can't remember what it is, for a cup of coffee. Unfortunately, I can't go out and actually buy a cup of coffee, but you know, you can give me that amount of money just through their donation system. You can also give me a one-off via PayPal, or you can become a patron from $1, which means you get these episodes ad-free and ahead of other people. Do you think this episode's worth $1 or 80p? I think it is. I think it's worth more than that. But at the moment, if that is what you can give, that is what you can give. Any and all amounts are amazingly appreciated, and I can't thank you enough for supporting me through these absolutely brutal times. I've also started a podcast called Simon Kane Quarantine, and I'm releasing episodes on a regular basis about, it's just a bit of chat, really. It's just me chatting into a mic about things that I've seen in the news and positivity and trying not to go insane in the current climate. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting in my room talking to a microphone on my own and releasing it to the internet is probably a sign that I'm going insane, but let's assume that I'm fine. If you're new here, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you're old here, please don't forget to give us an honest, ideally positive review in iTunes. And either way, please do join the Facebook group. It's called Ask the Industry Podcast, and it's on Facebook. Obviously, I'm going to be doing a lot of pods over Skype in the next couple of weeks. And if you want to get your questions asked to the influential people in the industry that currently doesn't exist and is falling apart, that's the best place to do it. So join today. But for now, this is Eddie Kassar.
I'm a publicist by trade, and I was fortunate to publicise a jazz festival at our National Arts Festival in the late 80s, early 90s. And the National Arts Festival is called the Grahamstown Festival. It was politically very important because it was almost left alone, this is during apartheid years, by the security police, and basically a lot of theatre was anti-establishment and anti-apartheid theatre. And it became a hotbed for anti-apartheid theatre. There was a very strong jazz festival that was created by a colleague of mine who asked me to publicise it, and it used to be sponsored by Smirnoff for the vodka people. In the early 90s, there were two comedians at the festival. Now, this festival in the African context is large. In the international context, it's not that big. But there must have been 500 shows a day, possibly. There were two comedians, so-called comedians, and both of them used their stage as anti-establishment, anti-apartheid messaging. One of them was a very famous guy by the name of Peter Dirk Ace. He's terribly famous back home. He's a man in his 70s and dedicated his life to satire. And the other one was a musician, come musical theatre expert, by the name of David Kramer, who highlighted the ills of apartheid through musical theatre. And that was in the early 90s. We became a new country in 1994. And in 1995, there were 22 stand-ups at the festival. And I saw in my mind's eye that we should be showcasing these folk. I tried to convince Smirnoff to give me money to put on a comedy festival. And it took me 3 years, but in 1997, the first comedy festival in South Africa was held over, I think it was then, 3 weeks. And I was bowled over by the response. It has grown and evolved over that period of time into the country's largest comedy festival, obviously the oldest. It now runs in a similar form, but it showcases South African stand-up comedians and interspersed them with international variety acts. And it's become almost like a rites of passage for the local population to go to. And that is what we now call the Cape Town Funny Festival. That's the answer. How's the scene? Mm. How's the comedy scene and other festivals? There are other festivals in all the centres, in Johannesburg, in Durban, in Bloemfontein. There are others in Cape Town, but not as long and, might I say, not as successful as the Cape Town Funny Festival. However, what has also happened is that apartheid was a terrible thing over many reasons. But one of the major things was that it made South Africa feel that it wasn't part of Africa. So the result is we were unaware that there were other countries north of us. The beautiful thing of cultural association is that festivals have been created, or maybe were there beforehand, in Zimbabwe, in Rwanda. Rwanda, Kigali is the capital of Rwanda, has a fantastic theatre festival. Now, this is the country that in 1994 went through genocide, killing a million people in a month. Africa is fascinating in that way. How do we stand in the rest of the continent? I have no real idea. But as far as the country goes, we're a leader in the field.
So many questions off that. Yeah. So let's start with, okay, so Smirnoff is a sponsor.
Yeah.
And the government impact on comedy as an art form in the country. How many comedians were there when you started doing the festival?
Two to 22.
22, sorry.
This is the jazz. At the Grahamstown Festival. Correct?
So there were 22 comedians. Yeah. How many of them were using it as a political platform at that point? Do you mainly have political comedians, or is it...
No, we have both. Okay. But at that time, everything was... The country started discovering its own people.
Yeah.
Because apartheid was very successful in keeping people apart on all levels, from schooling to beaches to buses to everything. We started to discover each other, and a lot of the comedy was laughing at each other,
yep.
And discovering that black folks do this, so-called coloured folks do this, Asian folks do this, and white folks do that, and laugh at each other.
Mm.
It's still done up to a point, and very cleverly done up to a point. And how many of those people embrace comedy? Most of them.
Mm.
Embraced politics? Most of them. Mm. Because we discovered that there were other people with different, with similar thoughts.
Mm.
So, you know, it was a lovely time in South Africa, this period of transition. And diversity breeds good comedy.
Of course.
Yeah. And I don't want to go all the way and rush 30 years forward, but or 20 odd years forward, but the situation in the country, the diversity of the country, and the history of the country, the history of colonialism, and this breaking of borders and people discovering each other. If you put a witty person, intelligent, smart, elegant, into a situation like that, you're going to find Trevor Noah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he comes from. And he's been on our show many times, and we've worked together since the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing to do with his development at all. Right. We were just enablers. The festival enabled him to get a bigger audience, and at the end of the day, it's all him. It's no one else. You know, stand-up comedy is exactly that. It's about you.
Exactly.
It's a terribly difficult art form.
I think good festivals raise up good voices. I genuinely feel like, in particular, I love the Edinburgh Festival, but I feel like that's something it could be doing more of. I feel like they stay too impartial and they're not involved, whereas I find localised festivals, like this one, like Perth and stuff, really, really try and build up the local scene as well as bring in people. And it sounds like that's something, I mean, we were talking about your competition yesterday,
yeah,
to try and find the next Trevor.
As an art form that has its basis in language, and in talking and the spoken word, storytelling amongst African heritage is hugely important.
Yeah, completely.
Because that's how history.
Yeah,
they didn't used to write the stuff down. Your father used to tell you because his father told him,
mm-hmm.
and that tradition is still very strong. Good storytellers usually make good comedians.
Yeah.
Firstly, secondly, is that what we do back home? African folk have embraced stand-up comedy, and the stand-up comedy scene is basically the top 15 comics in the country are mostly African. 90% of them are African, firstly. Secondly, is that we got into contact with the folk who run comedy clubs, the so-called townships. It was a fabulous eye-opener for me, because I partnered three of these guys. One guy has won a UNESCO prize for converting tin shacks into theatres.
That's amazing.
And he goes to the established theatres in town, opens up their storerooms, gets the old sound desks, the old lights, and anything else, and old seats and whatever, and brings them into the township and creates theatre in the township. Now, these places exist, and they're doing Pilates in the morning, supervised homework in the afternoon, and flamenco in the evening, besides having stand-up comedy shows and whatever. It's fascinating to see.
Mm.
And besides you, there are goats running around, and it's super interesting.
Yeah.
I partnered with these guys at the taxi ranks and in taxis and on the vernacular radio stations. We promoted that we're looking for new comics. You want to get into this industry? Mm. And the prize being a 3-minute spot on the Cape Town Funny Festival. It was magnificent what came out. And we've learned along the way that a lot of these young guys, even though they're urbanized, and even though they speak better English than you and I, are performing in the vernacular, which is their market.
Yeah.
And there's some colleagues of mine, some comics up north, that are filling 8,000-seater stadiums for comedy in the vernacular. The populace has embraced stand-up comedy. So we run this competition, and I've done it for 3 years now, five years now, and I think four of the five guys that have won, people that have won the award, are still performing stand-up, which is wonderful. Copywriters, all.
Completely. I'm just trying to paint a picture of the whole of the country in relation to the festival, within governmental policies, because like you said, that's obviously been a big impact.
Yeah.
And I wondered, because we spoke a lot before, you know, yesterday, about sponsors and how they've impacted the festival. I think what's really interesting is Smirnoff is not a brand that I would personally associate with one that would take a risk on a comedy festival in a country like South Africa, if I'm being blunt. And you said it took 3 years. How hard was it? I mean, what was the process like of trying to convince them to... Could you have done it without a sponsor, for example?
No.
No, okay.
Definitely not.
Well, let's talk about that. So how...
Definitely not. unlike the rest of the Western world, or the world that I travel to, the UK and Europe and Australia now. Take Australia, we're at Adelaide Fringe at the moment. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen poor people at all. And poor people in my country are poor. In other words, that Trevor Noah can, in his book, there are nights that he goes to bed without eating. So result is that this country doesn't know poor people. Everybody seems to be of a certain class that can lead a normal life and pay their bills, etc., etc. In our country, there are 58 million people. The government has to house them, feed, create hospitals, create schools, create. So there is a very, very small history of sponsoring the arts through government. So it falls on commerce to pick up that
slack.
That slack. Our media are very good at promoting stuff like new festivals, the arts, and this, that, whatever. So result is that it was a natural for Smirnoff to get involved with something that was, hold it, this is new, this is cool, this is going to work. And they lived with me for 7 years and did extremely well. I learned in that time what sponsors are looking for.
Yeah.
I gave a briefing yesterday on sponsorship and the arts and whatever in my country. I had to change some of the content of my show to make it more acceptable to the masses to attract sponsorship. Mm. Because in my country, you can't take money from a company that operates in the mass market and then possibly insult that mass market, because, you know, it's going to land up in problems. So that's the story.
So there's two things you've said separately, but they're the same thing, I feel. You've said most successful comedy festival.
Yes.
And the sponsor did very well.
Yes.
I'm wondering how you gauge both those things. Like, what's your measure of success?
Okay, measure of success as far as the public goes are bums on seats.
Bums on seats,
and
okay.
For the last 6 years, we get 700 people a night for 30 shows, 21,000 people, and that's exactly what happens. It's a very popular festival,
okay.
Firstly.
So it sells out?
It sells out,
yep.
Correct.
And can I ask, is that repeat people? Is that new people? Like, how?
I did the research a couple of years ago, 2018, and 40% of the people had been to 2 to 5 of my festivals.
Okay.
And 90% of the people said that come back again next year, even not knowing the bill.
Yep. So that's a question I'll come back to. Yep. But okay, how do you measure the sponsors?
So, and the sponsors is that we work in increments of 3 years. if they sign a game for 3 years, it's working for them.
Mm.
But Jive is a cool drink. Mm-hmm. It's a flavored, they've got different flavors. And it's winter. June, July is Southern Hemisphere winter. That's when I am in, for numerous reasons. They bring in, it took me a couple of years to convince them to use the sponsorship. But what their ad agency came up with was, let's make another flavor and call it the funny flavor. And so that's what they did. And that tastes totally different, looks totally different, and is specific to the festival and carries the festival's logo, etc., etc. And so, you know, if they're spending money in developing that, obviously it's working.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So is that only available for the month of the festival?
It's limited, correct.
It's only available. That's
correct,
amazing.
Correct.
That's a great sponsor.
What it does is the local Tesco's or the local supermarkets, whatever, who to get your stuff onto those shelves is very difficult, especially the cool drink shelves. Mm. The cool drink shelves are very quiet. In winter, they sell when it's hot. So it allows them the opportunity to get prime space in winter and sell a product which they would normally not sell.
Yeah, definitely.
So it works.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So as you mentioned, it's in June, July, which is your winter.
Correct.
And you said there are reasons for that.
Yeah.
And I'd love to go into sort of, because it's always interesting, because it sounds like, given that you weren't as aware of other festivals when you were first starting it up, most festivals, so for example, this one is ran now because other festivals are run before and after it, so it fits in
correct.
To the touring circuit.
Correct.
So why did you pick winter to do a festival?
Because most of my comics are up north in Johannesburg.
Okay.
They need to be housed.
Right.
It costs a fortune to house them in a tourist city like Cape Town in the summer. But in winter, the hotels have got space.
Right.
So result is that was the defining object, number one. Today, we've had the same hotel sponsor us with bed and breakfast for nothing for the last 11 years. Because it works for their staff. It's a staff motivation thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they get tickets and this, that, whatever, and they get to know all the comics, and they, it's just, it works for them.
So you said that about 40% have come to a few before,
yes,
at least maybe up to five.
Correct.
And 90% are going to come back next year.
Correct.
Regardless of lineup.
Correct.
So that brings me into how you're scouting for talent.
Yeah.
What you're looking for, and how often you have to rotate acts, and how often you can rotate acts, because obviously there's only a limited number of comedians in your country.
Yeah.
So give me sort of a feel for that. Like, how often are you looking for? I mean, you're here now. Scouting.
Okay, I'm here now, yep. and I look for acts, variety acts,
mm-hmm.
magicians, circus folk, musicians, stand-up comics with something different, who can put together an impactful piece with a high energy ending in 12 mm-hmm. minutes.
Right.
And that's what I look for.
That's a big difference to a lot of people, because a lot of festivals look for hour shows.
Yes, yeah.
And a lot of festivals are sort of after what they would call a product, in the sense of what could tour. So you're very much looking for a shorter spot.
Correct.
And something punchy that has a beginning, middle, end.
Correct. So right. So let's talk about somebody we know. Look at Tape Face.
Okay. Tape on his face. I love Sam. Yeah.
So there's Sam Wills and whatever. Mm-hmm. He can put together an 11-minute piece, a 12-minute mm-hmm. piece. Super impactful.
Oh, yeah.
Super different.
Yep.
There's a guy by the name of, out of the UK, called Kev Orkian. He's an Armenian pianist who does Victor Borge stuff. Mm. But he packages it in such a way, 11, 12 minutes, and hugely impactful. That's very important for me.
Mm.
Because I find that the point of difference between other festivals, where it's one stand-up after another, you could put on a really great guy as the second last act on the show, and the audience is tired. I can make the audience relax with Sam Wills, with Boy with Tape, or with Kev Orkin, or with the circus act and whatever. And the next guy that comes on after that, who is a pure stand-up that people have to concentrate to listen to, does extremely well because the person is relaxed.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So when you're doing your lineups,
yeah.
Do you know the percentages of circus to burlesque? I assume maybe burlesque.
Usually I have four stand-ups,
okay,
and three special acts.
A night?
The same show for 30 nights.
Okay.
A night, yeah. So the show is four local comics,
yep,
and three international speciality acts.
And that stays the same for the whole run?
Correct.
In the 700-seater?
Correct.
So most people would come to one night, they wouldn't come to a whole...
And if they found Sam Wills so fantastic, or the pianist so fantastic, some come to two or three times.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And I assume that's part of your surveying, where you're saying, who would you like to see back?
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So they have an impact on your booking as well?
They do, yes. And I've found some people who come to me in the auditorium after the show or before the show and say, I've been to every single one, every year I've been to your show. And so we've started a thing called Funny Fanatics. And we talk to them throughout the year. They know that I'm in Adelaide at the moment, what I'm looking for, etc. And we converse throughout the year.
Mm.
Yeah, and telling them what I'm going to try and put on, etc., etc.
So it sounds like, because a lot of festival founders are not as hands-on as you are.
Yeah.
So it sounds like they know who you are.
Yeah, they do.
Right.
They do, yeah.
So are you part of the branding, if you like? I'm not. Okay.
I'm not. However, because my audience don't know the special acts that I bring in. They know the local comedians.
Mm.
They don't know the special acts I bring in. And I sell tickets 5 months before we open. My logo has become very powerful, in the sense that they see my logo, the Cape Town Funny Festival, and hold it, we better book. And we have built up, because of its clean content, we've built up many corporate clients who buy full houses. And there's a discount structure that I can offer. If you buy one ticket, it's X amount. If you buy 650 or 674 tickets, it's much less. And yep. Charities can start making money on that. And because we have the reputation that we are clean and we're not going to insult anybody, it's an easy sell.
So every act has to be clean?
It's in their contract.
Right.
It's in their contract that that no profanities,
right,
no blasphemy. And it's a curated festival. You want to do it? Great. I've never had to sit down with anybody to say, just keep that out, because I do my research.
Of course, yeah. Of course. No, I'm wondering if you see an act,
yeah,
an hour, because you're going to see our shows here.
Yeah.
So if you went and saw an hour show, how you have that conversation of, I mean, it's in the contract, but do you say to them, hey, look, love to have you in my festival. You couldn't do that bit because it's got swearing in.
Correct.
Like, how do you approach it like that? You're just very open about it. You can say
fuck and you can say cunt and puss and whatever, so and so, but once.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, not the whole 12 minutes.
Hundreds. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the world's a dangerous place.
Mm.
The world's become a very dangerous place. And I don't want to. You're going to enjoy. I'm not going to chat. We are. Our objective is to entertain. Our objective is not to challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's. I'm upfront about it. You can criticize that. You know, it doesn't challenge you and it doesn't make you think. And this, our objective, and is to. It's a great night out. That's it.
Yeah. You're going to see a lot of our shows.
Yeah.
Is there a reason, do you go to clubs to see like 10-minute, 15-minute sets? Is there a reason why you don't do that?
No, I do that. I love showcases.
Okay.
Because I then see the performer in the format that I wanted.
Exactly, yeah,
So I wish there were more showcase, like that gala that we went to in the opening, which is great to see that. And there's a magician here, Chambers, American magician who did extremely well on America's Got Talent. You know, he's made for my show.
Mm.
Yeah, so... There we go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the UK, in particular, at the moment, we have a diversity quota, and we're trying to push for sort of more splits in gender, more splits in ethnicity.
Good.
I think it's a great plan, and it's moving forward in certain ways that I'm questioning and certain ways I'm happy about.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering whether where you're from, is there that? Is there any pressure on you? Do you have people saying we want more of a certain?
Yes, there are.
You do, okay.
And it's mostly from the white guys.
Oh, really?
Because the black guys have taken over completely.
Right.
And it's fresh.
So this is the other way.
It's the other way around.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's firstly. And also, I like to educate people on different forms of comedy.
Of course.
Is the bubble show comedy? You know, is the bubble show... Have you seen the adult
bubble
show?
I'm going to see it tomorrow night.
It's a fantastic show.
Yeah, it looks great.
Is it comedy? I want to educate... Anything that makes you laugh at the end of the day is entertaining and comedic.
Yeah.
So that's what we try and do.
Yeah.
Because by doing that, there are many folk, poorer folk, who haven't lived in theatres, who haven't been to theatre, to say, just hold it. This guy's put a tape over his mouth... And he's earning a living around the world.
Yeah.
Not only is he earning the living around the world, there's no spoken word. So he can do India and China and places with different languages. And so it educates people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just need to know the
songs. Is there a quota? My problem is finding female comics. Good female comics. And I'm not putting anybody onto the festival just for quota.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's a thing that intermittently sometimes has happened in the UK where people are getting things for those reasons. And it is interesting how we are viewed as a result of that around the world. Because equally, you don't want to put someone on who isn't good just because of what's between their legs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I just wonder what pressures you have because I've never been to South Africa.
If there is criticism of the show, well, obviously there always is. One of the major criticisms is there are not enough female comics. But generally in South Africa, there aren't enough female comics.
Okay.
And I find that when it comes to the filth barometer, female comics are filthier than boys.
In South Africa?
In South Africa, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So result is that they feel they have to be.
Okay.
I feel. And that's not on for me. You know, it's not. It doesn't fit into my...
No, that's the difference between an open access and a curated festival.
I got a call yesterday from a colleague of mine who told me, oh, you should see this girl's act that I saw, this guy saw the other day and this, that, whatever. She's fantastic. I hadn't looked at her in the past because she does a whole lot of sexual stuff and whatever. I'm gonna make a point and go and see her again. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, she could be doing a clean show. She could be doing a kid's show. Anything.
Correct.
Yeah, definitely.
Correct.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Have you ever performed stand-up?
Me?
Yeah.
Never.
No,
I'm petrified of the stage.
Okay.
Totally petrified.
I'm only interested because a lot of stand-ups in the UK start their own festival in their hometown.
Yes, yeah.
And I was curious as to whether, because you obviously run a PR agency.
Yes, correct.
And I'm curious as to whether, like, sort of, you feel it might have gone a different way if you had performed or if you were a performer.
Possibly.
And whether PR...
Possibly.
And whether being a PR has really informed the sponsorship side.
If I look back on this festival...
Mm.
The strength of the success of this festival is in its foundation.
Yeah.
That its foundation as far as marketing goes and publicity goes and sponsorship goes, was very strongly done.
Mm.
And I think that that has stood the test of time.
Yep.
Artistically, literally, there's a comic in Johannesburg that says, they call my show Eddie's Show. Eddie's Festival. Oh, he puts on comics that he likes and then comes every night. And that's basically very true.
Yeah. So I've done my research on your background in PR.
Yeah.
And I think the most interesting one for this conversation is that you were involved in the first ever Red Nose Day.
Yes, I was.
Yes. And I'm
that
curious.
Was in the '80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm curious whether that helped you get the first couple of sponsors and get the festival
going, or whether it certainly did. It certainly did. There's no doubt. And also,
what was your involvement? Because I couldn't quite find all the involvement. I put on
Red Nose Day in Cape Town.
Right.
And a national television company did a 9-city broadcast for the whole day. And basically, we had to prepare a Bible of what was going to happen on your stage at 10:08,
right,
and then 10:12, and the directors would come to you and say, at 10:12 we're coming to Cape Town, that thing's going to be, so you had to run a really tight ship. It was all entertainment, and most of the people I used were local comics, and that was in the 80s, who were just funny people or funny singers.
So it was like the first festival you did, in a way.
It certainly was the first one that I did, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And what did that do to the spotlight of comedy in Cape Town? Did it sort of springboard you off into this? Or what was the...
It may have, but subconsciously. In the sense that, just hold it, you know, there was a comic by the name of Mark Banks.
Yeah.
And Peter Dirk Ace, I've spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
That these guys are icons of the industry even today. Just following them and just, maybe did do subconsciously.
Mm.
I love the stage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super frightened of it. But I love what I do.
Amazing. Yeah.
So
One of the more interesting things we talked about that I think separates your festival from a lot of festivals I've ever spoken to was the way you look after artists and the way you treat artists.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's a curated festival, you have a one-on-one relationship with
Correct.
Artists, and it's not as much, you know, you apply, you pay a higher fee and then you just go and do the thing.
Yeah.
It's you kind of have hands-on, and you were telling me how you take them on excursions and how you put them up.
Well, we live together for a month.
Right, so you live in the hotel with them?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
So we live together for a month. We see each other most days, every night. That's firstly. The second point is that post-1994, the world discovered what a beautiful city Cape Town is. There is a big initiative back home to celebrate and enjoy your city in winter, because in summer, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too packed. To go up Table Mountain, you're going to burn your clutch going up the hill, because the traffic is so bad getting to the cable car that you forget it. So our winter initiative, and because I've been around for a long time, with the city authorities, is my 20,000 people who come to the festival are the market for the tourism industry in Cape Town in winter. Somebody has to go up the cable car. The X amount of tourists that come in June, July, but it is cold and it can be rainy if we don't have a drought or whatever. Mm. So result is that I've gotten to association with many of the excursion people, and to keep my comics happy, we have a high tea on the top of Table Mountain. We go to 200 kilometers out of Cape Town. There's a big 5 game reserve. We overnight there one Sunday night. We spend 2 days, Sunday there and Monday there. We go to the oldest wine farm in Cape Town, and we have a meal and taste the local wines. We go to Cape Point. Cape Point is the point of the continent where the two oceans meet.
Mm.
We go there. There are penguins and seals and whales, and we go and see them. So every week after week one, because we're so busy week one.
Of course.
Week two, three, and four, the excursions that we go out on, whatever. The red bus, the city sightseeing bus, is strongly associated with the festival. So the reason we do that, number one, is to show people Cape Town, and number two, I have found that a happy artist, you give an artist a couple of things. You keep them happy, you give them a full show, a full audience, you stroke their ego, and you pay them, and they'll do anything for you.
Mm.
And that's basically what the premise of this whole thing is that it's a very happy festival, and hence it's easier for me to recruit people to come from the UK or Australia, which is a hell of a long way away, to come to, and our exchange rate isn't that good. So the result is that I can't pay you the rates that you could get at another festival or doing two or three gigs back home or whatever.
Hello, let's take a break from this pod. But how interesting and amazing is this episode? I love it when a episode comes along in an area of the industry that is just different. It's just really interesting and different, and such a exciting breath of fresh air to hear how the festival takes place, where it takes part, the narrative and the structure of how they put together the show, people, and how the people and the audiences take to that, and how it works and how differently it works out in another country. I love this sort of thing, because the amount of times I apply for a festival and they're like, cool, do you have an hour show? And I'm like, yeah, and that's it. That's the structure. You do an hour or you do nothing, or you might do a split, but that's it. Whereas to do a showcase gala as a festival, what a cool idea. I'm loving it. I gotta eat. So here comes a short word from our advertiser.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I hope you got an advert. I checked the other day and the number of adverts my pod is getting is lower than usual, and it is usually quite low anyway, meaning I get less money than usual. So if you have some money, I'd really appreciate a donation. I'm still putting these together. They are currently my only source of consistent income, so any and all money that you can chuck my way would be really appreciated. I don't mind how big or small your donation is. Any and all money is very much appreciated at the moment. So yeah, check out the links in the show notes. You can send me a donation via Ko-fi. You can send me via PayPal, and you can send me one. You can become a patron from $1 per pod and you get them ad free. So if that appeals to you in any way, shape or form, get on it. In the second half, we are going to go into more detail on how he got his first sponsors, how the festival sponsors have shaped the festival, and how they continue to impact which acts can and can't perform at the festival. You're going to love it. If you come this far, you're really going to enjoy this. Let's dive back in.
Yeah, it's making up for that. And in well many done. Ways, it sounds like, I don't want to say it's like a holiday, but essentially there's no promotion on the act. They don't have to do any, like, you know, flyering or ticket sales or anything like that.
No.
It's all on you.
Yeah.
But it's always full.
Yeah.
And so they just turn up, do their 12 minutes, and then the rest of the day is their own, or they can come on excursions.
Well done. Exactly that. And the hotels on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is in many ways a nicer festival for a holiday-esque kind of vocation.
Correct. Now you'll see this afternoon where we have the Hive.
Yeah.
How many people run towards my desk because artists talk.
Yes.
They do all the festivals.
Oh, yeah.
They're here in Adelaide.
That's why I emailed him.
And they talk. they're talking to each other and whatever. They say, what do you do this year? I did this. Oh, and I went to Cape Town. And we've become a bit of a blue chip festival for artists to do.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Because equally, even though your exchange rate's lower.
Yeah.
To get into sort of businessy numbers on this, you also do less stage time as a result.
You do maximum 12 minutes, except the MC's got longer.
Yeah, so you would be paid less anyway as a result of doing sort of less time?
No.
No? Okay.
No. You know, there's a...
There's like a flat rate.
Yes, there's a flat rate. And obviously, if you're a huge profile person, there's a better rate, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's how most festivals work.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Trevor Noah would get more than...
Trevor Noah would get more. Trevor Noah took, I think, 6 or 7 months to cash my checks.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he was just busy.
Whatever.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you scout for acts personally. That's
correct.
You and Jane, is it?
Jane's my wife.
Jane, your wife. Yeah. So she isn't involved in that side of it?
She's not. She's involved in the administration.
Okay.
Which is as important as...
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. No, I just wondered whether she travels as well.
No, she doesn't.
Because I know you've told me now you don't go to the Edinburgh Festival due to health reasons.
Correct, yeah.
And that's why you come to this festival.
Well, that's how it started. Three years ago, I had my knees replaced.
Yep.
Came August, and I hadn't recovered totally, and I said to myself, I actually can't face walking all those steps and cobbles.
I can't, and I'm, yeah.
With two recovering knees.
Mm.
A lot of artists had told me, have you ever tried Adelaide? I said, it's too far away.
Mm.
It's too far, but you'll find the type of artist that you're looking for much easier, and it's summer, and etc. I came here 3 years ago. I haven't left. Mm. It really is an impressive festival.
Mm. No, yeah. I've loved it. I thought it's been amazingly well run, and it's been
how they help promoters and how they help artists.
Mm.
That learning curve the first time is done so quickly for you.
Yep.
What you try and learn in 4 or 5 years in Edinburgh, I learnt in one.
Yep.
And the contact is easy. Yep. And so it's certainly been a worthwhile long haul trip.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's really interesting from my perspective, because the British circuit is so Edinburgh centric, as you know.
Yes. Yeah.
That I think speaking about a much smaller festival.
Yeah.
I mean, every festival smaller than Edinburgh, but a much smaller festival in such a positive light from an industry point of view is massively interesting, especially for my audience.
Yeah.
Because everyone I know who goes to Edinburgh has a goal and an industry target, and or even if it's not a person, it's a general area.
Yeah.
From my perspective of coming to this one, the outlay is higher. I'm not going to say that the cost isn't going to be more.
Yeah.
But the level to which you have access to talk to people, I mean, I come and sit around here and I do. So we're in Fringe Central.
Yeah, correct.
Effectively, what Fringe Central would be, it's called Fringe Club here.
Yeah.
And you get talking to people, and everyone's just friendlier.
Correct.
Lovelier.
Correct.
They're less. Even though you said, you know, people do flock at you.
Yeah.
I feel like it's less intense than at the festival.
Interesting.
And it feels like everyone's kind of just enjoying this
at
their own pace, whereas in Edinburgh it feels like it's a race to get to the end and do well and get an award.
Correct.
You know? So that brings me to my next question about awards and how you see them and whether they translate. Because obviously if you win the Edinburgh Award, sometimes that helps in Adelaide. It doesn't always help in Perth, for example.
That's
does it make a difference in Cape Town?
I'm sure it does do. You know, when you look at the program, which is still so difficult for me to ascertain who is really great, or and I'm looking for that gem that's been undiscovered or that does something totally different, etc.
Oh, sorry, can I ask, do you mean undiscovered for Cape Town or undiscovered generally?
Generally.
Okay, fine.
Generally.
Because I'm imagining that, you know, Tape Face might not have ever been covered in Cape Town when you brought him over, but he was doing Britain's Got Talent and he's getting bigger and bigger.
Except that we got hold of him before that.
Oh, okay.
Paul Zerdan.
Yep.
As well. I just loved his work. Mm. And before, I think he came over in 2010.
Yeah.
So before he made it great or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
And I meant it in the, do you know, Searching for Sugar Man, the film?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean it in that way.
A friend of mine was the searcher.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Amazing.
Steven Seigerman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I meant in that way. Is it a Searching for Sugar Man type situation where you're looking for someone
that's
who hasn't been discovered here?
So much so, there was a comic. Do you know Earl Oaken?
I do, yes.
Yeah.
I love him. The
guitarist.
Sexiest guitar.
I brought him over.
Oh, amazing.
Numerous times.
Yeah.
And he was fascinated. And he was fascinated with Searching for Sugarman.
Yeah.
And I introduced him to Steven Seigerman, who runs a record
amazing.
Shop.
Yeah,
a record shop in Cape Town. And why? Because Earl Oaken had a documentary made of him.
Yes.
About
I've had him on this. I've
Is that so?
Him. Yeah, I know him very well. We've gigged together before in London.
There we go.
He's
so
great.
You know,
So
result. So, Cape Town. Well, it's a relatively small city. It's 4.8 million people, but the industry knows each other. I've been there for over 60 years, and it's so I'm well connected as far as that goes. So, just little things like that, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So, is it a case of you now only come to Adelaide? for show? For
no.
Okay.
No, there's a fantastic festival I'm going to this year as well. It's in Austria. It's called the Linz.
Linz.
L-I-N-Z in Austrians.
Okay.
Which is a street performers festival. There's some great street performers that come out of there. Actually, I've got a guy coming this year to festival, to Cape Town Festival, from Osaka, Japan, that I saw in Linz.
Wow.
That is a Japanese mime. He does. He's got a whole lot of props, and he does this mime routine to the Beatles song, "You Say Hello and I Say Goodbye." And that's the way he welcomes you to the festival. Because at the end of the day, the way that he does this four-minute routine and he lays out his props, he lays down the final prop, and actually all the props spell hello.
That's so clever.
Yeah, so
yeah,
that's the type of act that we showcase together with local stand-ups.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So when you were going to the Edinburgh Festival,
yeah,
what was your remit and what were you looking for?
Mostly, strangely enough, mostly in those days, stand-ups.
Yep.
But I found very quickly the Raymond and Mr. Timkins.
Oh, I love them. We've talked about them before. Yeah.
We've had them numerous times before. And then they start, once a person comes to festival, all they want to do is help you. Mm. To say, you know, if you like what I did, you should be looking at so-and-so. Mm. And so your job is much easier.
Of course. Yeah.
So Raymond and Mr. Timkins were very good to me. You know, Jamajabat out of Japan.
I know of them, yes.
Yeah. Also great. Boy with tape on his face, what he was called in the old days.
Yep.
I saw working the streets in Edinburgh.
So let's do this. So let's go with Tape Face as an example. Yeah. Or we can do Raymond. We can pick any act you want. Let's say you've seen them on the street doing an amazing act.
Yeah.
What's the process of getting them booked? Do you just come up to them after the show? Do you wait?
I come up with them after. I wait for them.
Okay.
Face to face.
Yep.
I give them a card.
Yep.
I used to give them an envelope.
Okay.
With an introductory letter saying, "Hi, I'm Eddie Kassar, I run this festival, etc., etc., etc. In the past, these people have been on. Mm. Please feel free to contact them, because I found that I just want to be open and so they know who they're dealing with and they can phone them, their agents or whatever, just what you know about Eddie and Cape Town and this, that, whatever, and give them and they feel a bit more confident." Mm. And that's the story. I don't give that letter anymore for some reason, because people know the festival.
Yeah, it's
everybody speaks to one another, you know, the Raymond and Mr. Timkins and this and that and whatever.
It's what we talked about yesterday, where I said level one is what you know.
Correct.
Level two is who you know.
Correct.
And level three is who knows you before you've even met them.
Very true.
And at this stage with your festival,
very true.
Even if they don't know every person that's performed.
Yeah.
There's a network enough.
I'm bringing out a British comic, a British kids magician come comedian.
So you're fine with kids because they're clean. So it's
a guy by the name of Graham Matthews.
Oh yeah.
He's not very well known in the UK, and he was very scared. He's out a place called Essex. Mm. He did Britain's Got Talent.
Him. Yes.
He did Britain Got Talent.
He wears really loud shirts.
And he did reasonably well on Britain Got Talent, but he's got a huge personality.
Mm.
And I asked him, "Are you interested in coming out?" And he was very skeptical. He hadn't toured before and this, that, whatever. So I sent him that letter.
Mm.
And obviously he did his homework. Mm. And Raymond and Mr. Timber said, "Oh, you crazy. You better go."
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Because that's a month of work. That's a month of work.
It's a month of work.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And now what we started to offer is that a month is a long time. If you want your family or your wife or your child or whatever to come out for 10 days, pay the flights. I'll do the rest.
Okay, so you'll put them up in the hotel.
In the hotel. They'll come to the come on these dates. I can take you to the game reserve. Do this and whatever. You can go up on Table Mountain with us. You can enjoy all the tourist activities. So it. Better.
It's the easiest sell festival I could ever think about. Do you know what I mean? Like I've done.
That's funny.
I've done so many for you know, like and
that's
never
funny.
Sort
it's
of.
It's a listen. Cape Town is an easy sell.
Mm.
It's a lovely place.
Yeah.
It's geographically spectacular. We have our problems. We've got problems with crime.
Mm-hmm.
We've got problems with crime. Be careful how to say that. Fact. But very few tourists are hassled because they're in the tourist areas and it's well protected, etc. But pre-apartheid, one would look at the country and say, think of Czechoslovakia or Hungary behind the Iron Curtain. South Africa was similar as such, basically. Post-apartheid, we are very much like Rio de Janeiro or Brazil, or I think Rio is the best example. Beautiful city.
few rich people,
many poor people. Anywhere in the world where you've got that, you've got a problem. And that's what that's what it is.
Yeah. So in terms of the safety of the act, that's also factored in.
Yeah, of course it is. But there's never been a problem. Mm. Unless you go looking
they
for
shit. Correct.
If you're going to look for cocaine or drugs or girls or rent boys or whatever, which I've been through that years ago, and my selection process is always a call to the agent. Is there any baggage I need to know about or this, that, whatever, which I've never had that problem again. But if you go looking for that shit, you're going to get into trouble.
Oh, yeah. And so do you work with independent acts or only acts with agents, or what's
usually
your...
I like to deal with independent acts.
Okay.
And even if they've got agents, they might direct me to the agent, but I prefer to deal with the...
Yeah.
I've got no problem dealing with an agent now. I have a cabaret act coming out of Montreal called Cabaret Decadence. They are puppeteers. Mm. Beautiful stuff. I'm dealing exclusively with the agent. I have no problem.
Yeah. No. I know that because most comedians, or a large number of particularly performers, are not the best with contracts. And are not
correct.
The best with admin.
Correct.
So a lot of people like to work with agents.
Correct.
But obviously that eliminates a lot of people who don't have agents.
Yeah.
Who might be amazing.
Absolutely.
Who often are.
Absolutely.
So I was curious as to whether there's a restriction there.
There isn't.
Okay. And if someone wanted to apply to come and do the festival, could they send you a video? Would you accept videos?
No.
Or does it have to see them live?
I would do. I prefer... That's why I tour the world. These festivals, I prefer to see you live because videos are great and YouTube is magnificent, whatever. But there's one ingredient that isn't in there, and that's the audience.
Audience.
And I need to see audience reaction.
But it would be, say, someone's listening to this now. I've got a big base of performers who listen to this. If they wanted to apply, if they send you a video, would that'll entice you?
Of course.
But then you'll want to be like, where are you going to be?
And then we develop a relationship, and then the guy would tell me, Eddie, I'm actually in the street at Linz, at the Linz Festival in July, or I'm Adelaide, come see me, or this, that, whatever. Or if it's strong enough, I'll start making my inquiries and phone the Raymond and Mr. Tinkins of the world and say, you know, and they'll tell me, oh, Eddie, they're perfect for your festival because they know the festival and they know my audience.
Definitely. Yeah. Social media.
Yeah.
You're on a lot of the different channels.
Yeah, I'm useless at them. I have a person who does that for me. But
I'm a
dinosaur.
You're a dinosaur.
Yeah.
So you're a technophobe?
I'm a technophobe.
Okay.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Even holding this microphone freaks me out.
Well, the next half dozen questions might not be applicable then.
Won't be applicable.
Let's see. Yeah. I wonder what your relationship's like with social media. Does it sell tickets? Have you got a mailing list? Is that
this
better
is
for it?
This is very interesting.
Yeah.
There's a guy, a colleague of mine, actually... a comic, one of the big comics in Cape Town, whose first live show was a Smirnoff Comedy Festival years ago. He now owns a comedy club in Cape Town, a big comedy club in Cape Town. And he told me the other day, and this makes me think a hell of a lot, I'm good at publicizing events. That's my...
Bread and butter.
Mm. Was my bread and butter.
Yeah.
So result is that he told me, I went to the club the other night and it was packed. I said, whoa, Kurt, it really is, your club's doing well. He says, now, but in 3 months' time, it takes me 3 months to sell a ticket. I said, what do you mean? So he says, depending on the advertising that I do now, I'll fill April. I said, what do you mean? So he says, it takes a hell of a long time for people to make decisions. Now, I have always believed that in promoting an event, there's a foundation phase, there's an activation phase, an introduction phase, an activation phase, and during the festival, you earn equity.
Yep.
People say, well, hold it, I'm not going to miss this next year. Mm. And that's where the saying, you're only as good as your last event comes from. In Cape Town, the newspapers have collapsed. Digital has taken over. People are getting all their news from their phones, etc., etc. And print has gone through. Their circulations have really collapsed. And I used to use print as the foundation phase and build up to radio just before the festival and television and this, that, whatever. Everybody during the festival and then post anything. Basically, but to sell tickets, I cross-referenced print with radio.
Mm-hmm.
Today, social media has taken over from print. So 3 months, 5 months hence, we start talking about it. Mm. People are learning back home that that Eddie's in Adelaide and he's doing this and he's looking at. So it's all foundation stuff for Funny Festival. Mm. And it continues all the way through till week minus three, and then we start heavily on radio. It's the festival itself, etc. And that's what we've done. So social media is terribly important and getting more important.
Completely, yeah. Completely. Yeah. And that actually brings me on to a couple of other questions about the press.
Yeah.
Because I think it looks great on social media if you say, I was interviewed in press, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like if you can screenshot, I got a review in this press.
Yes.
Then
yes.
It looks great.
Still does.
But it's not the actual article that gets people in, if that makes sense. So like if I got, if someone in Adelaide Today put me in like a top five shows of the Fringe, that article might not bring in people, but my screenshot that goes on Twitter that goes viral because my fans do it.
Will do. Very true.
So, with being someone who isn't really into social media and isn't really doing that, you're investing into it by getting someone else to do that
for
you.
Exactly. We have an agency that does our social media for us.
Right.
And actually, just 2 weeks before I came here, we went through the whole plan for Festival 2020 and what we're doing, how we're doing it, etc. Mm. So, you know, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, we're active and people know about and... Yeah, publicity works in a very strange way that every single thing that you say about festival lends to its building, lends to its foundation. The more you can be out there and talk to people on different channels, the better. Obviously, the better.
Definitely. Yeah, it's just when you open yourself up to that, you obviously have a lot more admin of answering questions as
Correct.
And so my thinking is, what platform's work in Cape Town? Like, is it like Facebook sells tickets, but Instagram's where they chat to you. Like, what are the
both those two?
Oh, okay, so both no those Twitter.
Twitter's smaller.
Yep.
But certainly Instagram and Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Facebook, because over the last number of years we've built up a hell of a lot of followers on Facebook, and Instagram is getting there. Mm. But those two are very, very important for us
for your business. Yeah. So, and you mentioned clubs in Cape Town.
Yes.
And the circuit there.
Yeah.
And I assume, from the sounds of it, you've got a very good relationship with the club circuit.
Yes, obviously. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, no, go
on. There's one club that produces comedy 7 nights a week and has for the last 5 years or 7 years or whatever. And it does it very well. There are many clubs that only do Thursday, Friday and Saturday, or Friday and Saturday. There's certain clubs that do only the townships, but some that cross over. Mm. So it's a very active industry.
And that's
Cape Town. Johannesburg, I don't know that well, but it's much. Johannesburg's a huge city.
Mm.
Johannesburg and Pretoria are huge. They're the commercial cities of the country. Comedy is very, very active there, and the national media, especially television, is up there. So they have better access to TV than what we do 1,600 kilometers away.
The reason I'm questioning it is because you're looking for short 10-12 minute spots.
Correct.
And I imagine at clubs that's a great place for you to scout for
Correct.
That sort of thing. So you go to clubs regularly?
I go to clubs on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I am contacted by young comics to say, I'm interested in being on festival, I'm performing here, there, whatever. And it's something that I deal with very sensitively because there's no such thing as a bad comic.
Mm.
There is no such thing as... there may be, but there's no such thing as a bad comic as such. Mm-hmm. So these young comics that come to me and said, I aspire to be on festival, come and see me and this, that, whatever. And when I say, listen, it's not made for... It's because the makeup of the festival is this year... is such and I've got these comics on that compliment you that do what basically you do so it's nothing to do with, and I have to explain that each time, but listen, comedy is alive and well and living in Cape Town. In South Africa really is.
I always particularly for the last 2-3 years I found not taking decisions like that personally really helpful. Because if a festival doesn't want you, or an agent can't take you, or anything like that, there's always another reason.
And also, this is an industry that attracts sensitive people, and it's an insensitive industry.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem.
That's a problem.
Perfectly put, yes.
Yeah, so the result is that these sensitive souls come along, and they deliver their work, and the industry can be terribly insensitive. You have to be have a skin like a wetsuit.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, definitely. To
be successful in this, yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Last sort of section, I want to just quickly go over sponsorship stuff.
Yeah.
Because that clearly is such a big part of the festival. Yeah. Not just financially, but in terms of they help you market stuff.
Correct.
They help you become part of the scene all year round. Really.
Correct.
So let's, and you can pick whichever one you want, but maybe is the best example.
Yeah.
I assume you've got like tiers of sponsors as
we
well
do.
With that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So when you're approaching sponsors, now is probably easy. So maybe we do one example from early days and one example for now. If you wanted to get your first sponsor today, if you're a festival and you want to start a new one today, because there's people that listen to us who do run festivals, what advice would you have for them to approaching a sponsor?
Spend money on the presentation. Spend money on your presentation. You have to stand out from the beginning. So marketers generally are executives. They are busy. They receive many of such like proposals on a weekly or daily basis, depending on the firm, on the company. So you have to stand out. Give as much information as possible in that proposal, even the amount of money that you're looking for, because he'll give you an interview on the factors that say, listen, this looks, guy's professional, looks interesting, and I can afford it. Mm. Those three things are vitally important. You have to get the interview first, firstly. Secondly...
So can I just take step one? You've made a PowerPoint and you've sent it in.
Well done.
That's step one.
It looks shit hot.
Yep.
And it looks interesting.
Yep.
And it's affordable to this guy. You've told him basically everything that there. He's going to get naming rights. He's going to get this. He's going to get that. He can sell his product at the bars or whatever.
Yep. And you'd give like different options. So like if you give this amount, you're this tier and this is what
Done. That's exactly that. Okay. Exactly that.
So I'm now the brand. I've said, yes, I love it. Come and have a chat.
Correct.
How would you add to that then?
You go in and there'll be questions that he'll want to ask. You in that proposal, you have put in your background and what you've done before and et cetera. The most important thing that you can tell him is that, or that company, is that you're going to take a risk on me in putting your name to this festival. And I'm taking a bigger risk because the money that you've asked for only covers the overheads. Your money lies in ticket sales. So if you're putting on something that's crap, you're going to make nothing. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to come to you again. Yeah. So result is that be at risk. Mm. And so when you sit down with this guy, tell him exactly. And he wants to know that his market is going to be influenced by this project. And you have to do your research and show them that, basically.
And then
you develop a relationship, secondly. Thirdly, if it's not mutually beneficial to each other, why the hell are you doing it?
Mm-hmm.
So I have built my subsidiary sponsors on that principle.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be, what's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
What's in it for you?
Mm-hmm.
If it works together, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what the principle is. Yeah.
So let's your first three sponsors.
Yeah.
Right, so we'll say after Smirnoff.
Yeah.
What did you, so you approached them.
Yeah.
What was the reason you thought they would work with the festival?
Because I needed accommodation.
Okay.
Okay.
So you approached the hotel.
Well done.
An individual hotel or a chain?
An individual hotel.
And
I hate dealing, this is a personal thing, I hate dealing with products that are controlled by a board.
Okay.
A board of executives, executives and whatever. There's some young upstart who's joined the board and he said, what's this thing we're doing in Cape Town comedy? Are you waste of money. And with a stroke of a pen, the sponsorship stopped for somebody who doesn't know its impact. So I like dealing with self-made companies that are still run by the owner. And the hotel is such, and Jive, the cool drink, is identical to that.
Okay, yeah.
So, firstly, and then secondly, and then the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
The radio station, who I find critical to, and the print sponsor, both of them came. So, I can guarantee my sponsor print coverage, pre, during, and post. And I can guarantee my radio sponsor, and you tell the marketer, I'm taking your money, but in the budget, I'm spending print advertising, I'm spending radio advertising. Mm. That you've made a deal with the radio station and the print is a different story, that I pay you one for one, but you're giving me 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it's built. But his sponsorship is covered in before you've even started the festival.
Yeah.
And that's the model it's built on.
It's a sort of the way you do it, at least, because I know other sponsors do it slightly a different way. Yeah. The way you do it is more, you've got a quality product, so by association, it's building up their quality product.
Over time, that will happen.
Yes.
Over time, that happens.
Yes.
If you're successful.
Yes.
Otherwise, and somehow, all the work that I've done since we started in 87 as Eddie Kassar Public Relations, tenure and continuation have been key to my success. In other words, very seldom do sponsors leave me, which is a good sign.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So what have been the biggest mistakes you've made or learnt from in terms of sponsors?
Question. That's a difficult question. Possibly not doing your homework enough.
As in on the brand itself?
On the brand itself. Right. Not learning, being a bit silly. My wife tells me that I'm too hasty.
Right.
When I get an idea, I like to run with it, and I should possibly think a bit more. But what have I learned? I've learned that the longer the tentacles of a sponsorship grow into the community, the less likely you are to lose that sponsorship because there's too much to lose. And I get my sponsors on all levels to try and work together.
Okay.
So result is that Barron's Volkswagen give me cars. And I find during the year that Barron's and the City Sightseeing Red Bus are doing a promotion together because they met at my... Now that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Or the Game Reserve and Barron's, Volkswagen, are doing a competition together. Come and service your car during the month of September. And when you come and pick it up, open the cubbyhole, and then maybe you could win tickets to the Game Reserve. So they start working together. So I know that relationship is magnificent. Mm.
You're the hub of those brands.
Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at this stage, forgive me if I'm wrong, you can go, when you pitch, when you have your presentation, you can say, here are some examples of things that have come out of this.
Exactly that. Exactly.
And
that.
Do you want to be part of my network? Not just the sponsorship there.
And not only that, before I came here, back in Cape Town, we did our first marketing workshop with all my sponsors, 40 people. I tell them what the show is going to consist of, what we're doing differently this year and whatever. And then I challenge them to say, what are you going to do for us? How are you going to use the sponsorship? Because if you don't use it, what you got it for?
Yeah.
So use the sponsorship. And the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, we have a second workshop. And they tell me how they're going to use it. And they want this as prizes. And they want trips up Table Mountain as prizes. And this is what we're doing on air. And this and that, whatever. And then the third workshop, I make sure that everything happens. And that's what we do. And hopefully, by the time we open on the 15th of June, we're about 80% sold out.
Wow. That's
That's the history over the last couple of years. That's what's happened. Because a lot of corporates, it's their winter.
It's their Christmas night. Well, their equivalent of their Christmas.
Well done.
That's genius.
Yeah. So that's what we do.
Okay. I'm going to ask you the last quick fire questions. They're quick for me. You take as long as you like over them. Okay, who was the first person to believe in you?
Who was the first person? My wife.
Your wife?
She said, do it. Go do it. Do it.
So you came to her with the idea for the festival?
Because I've got a big mouth and I talk a lot, and she's my sounding board, and she's totally opposite to me, and she said, I would go to that.
Okay. What is one unpopular opinion you have about the comedy industry?
One unpopular thing. I can't really answer that question because I love comedy, I love entertainment, but I am not nitty-gritty in the face of it daily. And there are other comics who, it's their profession, and they've started festivals. I sit outside that. Mm. So where I hear that there's envy and jealousy and whatever with other... We've been around for such a long time, and it's become the icon of the industry in Cape Town, that I'm just fortunate in that. I don't know what the...
Do you think it works better, you being detached from it in that way?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, in your particular case.
Yes, in my particular case,
Okay. A lot of comedians define themselves as comedians, but they make more money from like writing or script editing or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What job title would you say you tell people, and what job title would you say actually defines you financially?
You know, my MC is a guy by the name of Alan Committee. He's a magnificent... He's one of the country's top male actors. And you don't make money from acting.
No.
But you can make money, good money, from...
MCing.
From MCing. Mm. I'm his heroine, in the sense that a month of the year he becomes MC, he's damn good at it, but he's an actor. His heart tells him he's an actor, but he's a damn good comic and what's good. There's another guy who won my competition a couple of years ago. His name is Yasin Barnes, who has become a fantastic scriptwriter. Performs deadpan.
Yep.
But he's become a better scriptwriter. So what was the question?
What job title do you tell people you are?
Yeah.
And what job title would your finances dictate you are? I'm basically trying to isolate, like, whether there's a specific thing you do that maybe you're not keen on, like the admin side or something.
No, I'm the producer. I'm the producer of the Cape Town Funny Festival, secondary. But I am Eddie Kassar of Eddie Kassar Public Relations, who puts together the cycle tour, the major horse race in Cape Town, the biggest half marathon, the biggest whiskey festival. I used to do quite a lot of different things. So
knowing what I know about you a little bit, I'm surprised you go to wineries and not a whiskey sort of place, you know.
Because most people prefer wine to whiskey.
Okay. So you take them to a winery and you go off to a whiskey. Why not?
We make great. South Africa makes great whiskey as well.
No.
Yeah. And South Africa makes great brandy. Because of apartheid, nobody wanted to buy our grapes. For 46 years, they wouldn't buy our grapes. So the farmers were selling grapes, making wine, and the surplus wine they couldn't sell, they made brandy. So today we have the best 50, 40, 35-year-old brandy in the world.
It's fascinating what comes out of a horrible thing. You know what I mean?
It's correct. Yeah.
What is the biggest mistake you've ever made, and how did you overcome it?
What is the biggest mistake I've ever made? Possibly hiring an actor I hadn't seen live. Was a Korean magician, and she just didn't work on our stage at all. And it was just an embarrassing thing.
Okay. Yeah. What is the biggest misconception people have about either your festival, you, or South Africa?
What is the biggest misconception about me or whatever? It's a difficult question. I don't know.
Okay. I can take it out. I'm just wondering.
I don't know. You know, we are not a traditional comedy festival. We are a gala showcase that has got international variety acts and local stand-ups that puts a hell of a lot of bums on seats. Possibly the biggest criticism that would be from the industry is that I don't rotate comics. Mm-hmm. I don't rotate local comics.
Mm-hmm.
It's a valid industry, opinion. But at the end of the day, this is what, for me, works.
Mm.
That's it.
Completely. Yeah. What is the most interesting thing you do that nobody gets to see?
Most interesting thing I do that nobody gets to see. I think what I do now, going to festivals, scouting, it's damn difficult. The jet lag from Cape Town to Adelaide took me 3 days to get over.
Mm.
I didn't sleep for 3 days. So I found myself, and I'm here for a limited time, I'm seeing 4 shows a day. I'm finding myself nodding off in show number 2 of each day. And it's damn hard work. It really is. It's fascinating. And I meet great people and great acts and folk like you and whatever. This festival is really good at making people meet each other.
Mm.
It's damn tiring. It's damn hard work.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and you get to a certain age, it ain't that easy.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Who do you think is the most underrated person in the comedy industry?
As a person or name?
I keep it as open as possible because it can be you know an act that you think needs more shining.
I really think there are a couple of guys, a couple of comics in South Africa that are on the brink of making it big time. The world is fascinated by our past and how we've avoided civil war, sort of got on with one another. It's going to take generations. But there are a couple of comics that cover that period extremely well. There's a lady by the name of Tumi Muraki out of Johannesburg that one needs to watch. There's a person by the name of Loiso Gola who operates out of London. And there's a guy by the name of Sifiso Nene. Oh, magnificent work. There's another guy by the name of Tats Nkondo out of the Eastern Cape. Fantastic work.
Do they all have stuff online I can link to?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, yeah, I'll find them.
And then Trevor's he's shifted the spotlight onto him, and then to say, where did this guy come from? That spotlight will start showing up these names I've told you.
Definitely.
And then there are local guys. There's a guy by the name of Mark Lottering, who is a very great South African comedian, great musical theatre. He's just developed a whole brand around musical theatre. The man's a genius, and he can't walk in the streets of Cape Town in the sense that he he does.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's very generous with his celebrity, but he's just magnificent. Possibly won't travel as well as Trevor does or whatever, but these are great names.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah.
What's one thing you wish...
Hold it. Just let me stop you there. Is that our history, the emancipation of slaves was in 1834 in December. In December 1834, it is celebrated in Cape Town by a carnival called the Minstrels Carnival, where the local folk, and without being derogatory, because being we're fascinated with race in South Africa, and they're whites and they're blacks and they're Asians and they're coloureds. It's not a derogatory word. Coloured is, they say, we're the only locally produced population, because it's a mixture between whites who came and the local black people made brown people. So the result is that the emancipation of slaves in December is celebrated by a carnival of music and dressing up and laughter and songs, traditional songs. And basically these songs sung in the vernacular, but they were all songs mocking the white bosses.
Yeah.
Humor has always been part of the way that people have dealt with adversity.
Of course. Globally, but especially... Globally. Yeah,
or look at the Jewish folk.
Yeah.
So in December, we have this big carnival in Cape Town, and people think it's a festive carnival because it's December. It's actually not. It was the emancipation of slaves on December the 4th. It's just that adversity breeds humour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cape Town, South Africa's got that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's... I think one of the reasons, particularly like England and other countries, are very fascinated by your past is because it's sort of a flipped reverse in a lot of ways of ours. Like you said, in particular industry, where you were like, oh, well, it's they're wanting more white comics or more female.
Correct.
You know, it's the complete opposite.
Correct.
And so it's sort of like showing them the... Because in comedy, a lot of humour comes out of flipping things.
Yes.
You know, sort of going, wouldn't it be stupid if it was this way around?
Correct.
And so it's sort of interesting to see that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And hence, the resonation of Trevor Noah with the rest of the world.
Oh, yeah.
With underdogs with the rest of the world. The black population in the States and the Hispanics.
Yeah. There is, and I use the word novelty in a very positive way. I don't mean it in a bad way.
Yeah.
But there is a novelty to his voice and his story and his history in America, in particular, which couldn't really be told by anyone else.
Very interesting.
Do you know?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We'll end on two more.
Yeah.
What's one thing you wish you were better at?
Thank God, I've got a wife who's a fantastic financier in finance and admin, because I can do it, but I'm not good at it.
Yeah, I said
that's it.
I hate it. I think I like crossing things off lists. That's it. But I'm not very good at it. I'm going to do one last extra one because I want to know your answer to this. What is one disadvantage of being you?
Success for me has come late in life. I would have loved to have done an Adelaide or an Edinburgh in Cape Town. And so, what is the disadvantage? My age.
Okay. That's. I think everyone would have liked to start 10 years sooner.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
Exactly.
And have the knowledge that we have.
Yeah, now, but now, younger. But definitely, yeah. Definitely.
And the confidence that you bring to sponsors on this level, all that nonsense, which takes time.
Oh, it does. Yeah, definitely. What's one bit of advice you would give to anyone who wants to apply to your festival?
Don't be upset if I say no.
Okay.
You go into a file, and it's not file 13, that I always look at.
Yeah, yeah.
When thinking of future festivals, and just go back to the 12 minutes of high impact, funny, something totally different is what I'm looking at when I talk about international variety.
Amazing. This has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Simon.
That was Eddie. Hearing about how South Africa's past, including apartheid, has impacted their present, and out of it has come some real positives, including outstanding comedy that really punches up, was fantastic and really interesting and really made my day when I was out in Australia. I loved learning about the festival, and I found the structure of it really interesting. Imagine doing 10 to 12 minutes a night and then getting taken around a ton of exciting and interesting tourists and landmarks during the day. Like, and then having your hotel sorted as well, right on the beach. Like, imagine that being the festival you do rather than having to run around and fly for hours. What a beautiful concept and idea that really puts performers first and
and just it was amazing. I really found it an interesting thing to dive into and hear how it became such an important part of the zeitgeist of the country, but also in Cape Town. I can only dream of doing that because I am not family friendly, and I can also only dream of it because I'm in quarantine, and I'm sure you are too. How are you doing? Not going insane? I hope that everything's fine at your end. If you would like to drop me a line and chat about anything to do with the podcast, my email is in the show notes, and you can send me through some suggested guests. I'm going to be doing a bunch of podcasts over Skype in the next couple of weeks, and if you would like to get your questions asked to the influential people, then you can do that via the Facebook group. Please do join. It's called Ask the Industry Podcast, and it's on Facebook. Obviously, as I mentioned, I can't go out, I can't gig, and so my income has been dramatically slashed. So if you would like to donate, there is a link in the show notes. You can do it via Ko-fi, PayPal, or become a patron of the podcast from $1. $1 is really not that much. I am aware if you are broke, do not even think about donating, because I don't want anyone going into debt to support the show. But if you have a job or a day job that you are able to still continue to do in this very uncertain and scary time, I would massively appreciate a donation. I'm assuming this is keeping you company while you sit at home trying to avoid doing any work and worrying about the end of the world. So if it is offering your entertainment life anything, I would really appreciate any and all money that you could throw my way. I've also got a new podcast called Quarantine. It's called Simon Kane Quarantine, but whatever. It's linked below in the show notes. You can find it on iTunes and Spotify and all the other places. If you want to hear a bit of positive chatter from someone who can't go out and can't do much, that's the next place of doing it. They're quite bite-sized, they're sort of 20 to 30 minutes at most. So if you want some background noise or just to talk about some stuff that's in the news or things that are happening, that's the best place to get it. If you've enjoyed this episode and you want more episodes from comedy festivals, you can find loads in the backlog of the podcast, including the Edinburgh Fringe, Hastings, Camden, Adelaide. There's loads. If you're looking at getting into the currently non-existent comedy festival circuit, there are tons of episodes to be getting onto and to research for when the festival circuit comes back at some point in the next 10 years. I have no idea when we'll get work again. The Ask the Industry podcast is a Fruit That Got in Gravity's Way production for the internet. All elements were created by me, comedian Simon Kane. Thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for subscribing, and thank you very much for rating and donating if you do. I'll see you all in about 14 days' time. Bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.